know someone. All right, here we go. It says, "Vayar Bala ben Tzippor kol sh'ras Yisrael Amori." Bala ben Tzippor saw everything that was that the Jews had done to the Amori. "Vayagar Moav mitnei ma'am ma'od." The people, Moav was very afraid of the people, very much so. "Ki rabu," because they were so tremendous. "Vayakatz Moav mitnei b'nei Yisrael," and they were disgusted because of b'nei Yisrael. "Ve'omer Moav ozikne midyan." Ato, now, "Yilachu ha'kahol oskos v'yosvenu." The kahol is going to lick up all of our surroundings. "Kahol kashor t'yarkat sadeh." Like a shore licks up the yarkat sadeh. And then, "Uvolak ben Tzippor, melech lemoav bo'isahi." Volak, the son of Tzippor, was the king at that moment. Okay, so what's Chad? Why not start off that way? Start off with "Vayar Volak melech moav, as kol asher asa Yisrael Amori." Why not start off with the fact that he's a king? So what does it mean that we have to end off with the fact that he's a king? Why do we say that? Okay. Rashi says he wasn't ready to become a king. He wasn't fitting to become a king. Why wasn't he fitting to become a king? Because he really was from Midian. He was one of the Sarei Midian. When Sihon died, there was no one who was able to take over the people of Moab. So the only people that they could go to was go over to Midian. And they said to Midian, "We need a guy." They pulled over Balak and they said, "Okay, let's go get Balak." Says the Maral Diskin. That's why the Sarei Moab were so upset. Because they sat there and they looked at themselves and they said, "Listen, if we had a warrior king, a guy who was going to be an awesome guy, a guy who would be able to lead us into the war and do everything, then we wouldn't be so worried. Because even though Bnei Yisrael is coming up against us, we got this king that we're not worried about. Because this guy will be able to lead us. This guy will be, you know, some unbelievable person. He'll take care of us. This huge general, this huge warrior, this huge whatever it is, he'll take care of us." But the problem is Balak was the king. Balak's the king right now. And Balak's a nobody. That's the wording that they were saying. They were saying these words. "Vayomer Moav el ziknei Midyan, atu lachokal," etc. "Ubalak ben Tzippor melech Moav beisehi." And they were saying, "And Balak ben Tzippor is our king. We've got a nobody as a king. There's absolutely nothing that we're going to be able to do to fight Bnei Yisrael. There's absolutely nothing. So where are we going to go?" So that's what got them going. That's what got them all upset. It's like if Eretz Yisrael went into war and somebody said, like, "Well, at least we have Prime Minister Netanyahu." What does that do? That doesn't lead you to believe that you're going to win the war any better than what you already have. That's just it. That's why Balak was so desperate, that he wanted to do something that was so crazy to show everybody that they're wrong, show everybody that he had a plan, and that he was going to bring his place in history, that he was going to be the greatest king that Moab ever had. What was that place? The ability to say that I fought Bnei Yisrael by cursing Bnei Yisrael and making it happen in that way. So he tried to hire Bilam to come in. It was out of desperation, because he knew that the people didn't want him anymore. He knew that the people were upset. He knew that there were bad things going on, and it didn't work out the way that he planned, but he did make it into posterity. The parsha is named after him. He got a whole parsha named after him for his trying to destroy Klal Yisrael and showing how he wanted to do it and how he failed miserably. So that didn't make it in there. You should know that the Orachaim and the Sforno both says, I'm sorry, the Orachaim agrees with this Maral Diskin, but the Sforno and the Ramban both say that Balak was a tremendous warrior, and he was the next greatest warrior, next to Sihon and then Og, and then came Balak Melech Moav. He was the third guy that was up there when it comes to warriors. It goes against the idea that we were trying to say with the Maral Diskin, but at least with the Maral Diskin there is something. Listen to this. Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, he's a Rosh Hashiva in Bnei Brak. This is Zilberstein, said the following. He said he once walked into a house in Bnei Brak, and he saw that there was this huge chair that was sitting at the front of the table. And this chair had like golden arms that went all around it. And it was huge, like cushions and everything. And went all the way up to the sky. It was this huge chair. And he looked at it and he turned to the Bala Bas and he said, "What's going on with the chair? What's that chair for?" So he said, "You know, a woman should look at her husband as if her husband is the king. So I sit down on my throne. And this is my throne, and this is how I become the king. Now people look at me and they say to me, oh, now I believe that you're the king." So Yitzchak Zilberstein lashed into him. And he said, like, "You think that you're a king because you're sitting on a chair? You think just sitting on a chair is good enough? If you don't do what your wife wants, then your wife will throw you and your chair outside of the house, and you'll both be thrown out. You'll have absolutely nothing. That's not the way to become a king. The way to become a king is to do things for the people." So he explained. He said, "Reb Chaim Brisker has a lesson in how to become a king, and it's these three psukim. That over here, says, Balak ben Tzippor saw everything that Bnei Yisrael did to the Amori. And Moab was scared of Bnei Yisrael. And they were disgusted because of Bnei Yisrael. And they said, now everybody's going to eat this up. Everybody's going to do this. Everybody's going to do that. And then it says that he became king of Moab at that time. At that moment, that's when it says, now he became a king. Says Reb Chaim Brisker, the whole pshat, yeah, how you become a king, is that you see what people are doing. You see what's going on. You see where everybody is. And you see, what do the people need? What do I need to help out with? What do I need to do for things to happen? And then, and after that, only then are you ready to become a king. The way to become a king is to listen to others and to do what other people want, not to put yourself in this massive chair, to sit yourself in a chair and to show everybody else how covetous you are. It's for other people to think that you have a, that you're a real king, and you don't poo-poo everyone's problems. That's the idea of how to be a leader in a house. That's the idea of how to be a king. That's the idea of how to be a chassan. That if a person is going to become somebody is going to become a chassan, or somebody is going soon, maybe on Wednesday or something, if somebody is going to become a chassan, or somebody is going to become a king in any way, shape, or form. That wasn't referring to you, but regardless, that's how you do it. You listen to what other people do. You listen to what other people say, and you keep doing it, and then everything's different. I've never seen this pasuk before. I've never noticed it before. But there's a pasuk in the Haftorah that comes from Micha. Micha says a strange line. He says, "Ami, zechor na, my people, please remember my yod Balak Melach Moav. What did Balak, the king of Moav, advise? Tell me. You have to remember that? What would be the point of remembering that?" And in fact, it's brought down by the Pardes Yosef and from the Tzfas Emes that there's a mitzvah to remember every single day what Balak tried to do to Bnei Yisrael. That Balak tried to hire Bilam to kill Bnei Yisrael. Now what Bilam did. Very similar. The exact same mitzvah that we have with Amalek is the same mitzvah that we have of Balak. There's some mitzvah that we have to be able to remember every single day that which we were trying to do. Says the Tzfas Emes. That's why it says in Brachos and Yudbeis Mabeis that it almost made it. Parshas Balak almost made it into Kriya Shema. Into Parshas Kriya Shema. Parshas Kriya Shema was going to be Shema Yisrael and V'Ahavta, V'Hayim Shemoah, V'Yom Yomer, and then all of Parshas Balak. All of Parshas Balak all the way through. It would have been the three brachos. The three brachos that Paul gave us. But that's what it was supposed to be. Says the Tzfas Emes. That's why. Because you have a mitzvah every single day to not only say Kriya Shema, but to really remember all that Balak tried to do to us. Such an unbelievable mitzvah. So what's the pshat? What's the idea behind it? How we accomplish it today, by the way. Can anybody think how we accomplish it today? We do it. You just don't realize it. Matovu. Every single day. If you don't say Matovu in the morning, do it. Now you should do it. It's the time to do it. You have a mitzvah every single day to remember from Matovu Alecha Yaakov what Balak tried to do, that he tried to curse us, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. So what's the mitzvah? What's the idea behind this mitzvah? What are we trying to say with it? The Imre Emes says also it's not a full mitzvah because it's Chor No. Please remember, but it's nothing more than that. But there is a mitzvah. Okay, so I was thinking of the following. Maybe the reason why there's a mitzvah is because that Balak was supposed to be a king, but he wasn't a real king. Why wasn't he a real king? Because he didn't really do it in the right way. So when somebody doesn't become a king in the right way, you try to remember, how should we become kings? You should become a king by listening to the people and by doing what the people say and doing things like that. And B, the way that Balak should have been and understood what the people needed more than just do things on our own or do crazy things on our own. But I've got another voice. This comes from a Chassam Sofer. The Pardes Yosef, this is the Likud Sefer. He quoted a Chassam Sofer at the end of the Chassam Sofer Al HaTorah. There's like a bunch of Likutim at the very, very end of it. At the very end of it, it brings down the following board. And I'd never seen this before. It was absolutely unbelievable. And it's such a great answer. Pure, pure Chassam Sofer. If you want to hear a Chassam Sofer, this is like the definition of the Chassam Sofer's mind. He asks, Micha is the last Navi in all of Trei Aser. Which means, Micha essentially is the last Nevuah of all of Bnei Yisrael. Because after Trei Aser came the Ksuvim were the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, etc., or those things that were written down by Shlomo that were explained by them. But either way, there's no Nevi'im after Micha, which means that Micha's Nevuah is the last Nevuah that's given over to Klal Yisrael for us to learn from. This Perek, Micha Perek Hei, is the last Perek in Micha, which means that this is the last Nevuah, the last prophecy that we're supposed to get something from. And what does it say there? In the last prophecy, it says, "Ami zechor no mayod Balak Melach Moav." Remember what Balak tried to do to Bnei Yisrael. That's the last prophecy that we get, the last one. Why? Why is this the last prophecy over anything else? Says the Chassam Sofer. it's very hard to believe in our leaders. If Rav Eliashiv gives a psak din, and I don't agree with it, it's very hard. I heard a psak this week. It was unbelievable. I got this email that somebody had given me online, and I mentioned it on Tuesday. Somebody brought it, gave it to me online, and I saw these psakim. I'd never even heard of them before. If you go to the washroom, and you don't make an asher yotzar, you can't answer a main to a bracha. I never heard of that before. Psak from Rav Eliashiv. It's coming out in a new sefer that he's I guess that's almost come out. Then another psak din. Another psak halacha. Psak halacha is, if you have chocolate and, let's say, tea. No, it was chocolate and... It was a... What was it? It was a fruit, right? It was a fruit. Chocolate and a fruit on the table. So normally, you make a bracha on ha'etz, then you make a bracha on shakel. The problem is that chocolate is a suffix ha'etz, because it comes from a tree. It's from a chocolate bean, the magical chocolate bean. And again, it comes from a tree. If that's true, that means you can't make... I'm sorry?
Because it's formed like mashed potatoes. You say shakel, you don't say adon.
So technically, it should be, because the only usage that you have for that bean is the chocolate. So it's a suffix. Some people say shakel. We obviously pass in shakel. You should know, by the way, Chassam Sofer never ate candy his whole life, because there were questions about sugar and questions about chocolate. What broccoli are you making them? What are you making a sugar cane? What are you making anything like that? Coffee is also a bit of a kasha. But the Chassam Sofer never made a broccoli on chocolate for that reason, because he honestly didn't have an answer for it. Of course, how did he not, right? I believe the only case that they have at the Chassam Sofer was in tea. They said, because the Chassam Sofer makes a broccoli achrona after you drink tea. Not everybody makes a broccoli achrona on tea, because tea, you're only sipping. You're never drinking enough to be able to have a full drink, so not everybody makes a bracha achrona. But the Chassam Sofer made a bracha achrona, and it says that he made it on tea, but it doesn't say it on coffee. So I don't know if the Chassam Sofer ever drank coffee. I have absolutely no idea. But either way, regardless, it's such sucking. When I hear a psak like that, and I hear, oh, so you got to make a bracha on the shahakol first, so you can be yotze the chocolate, so you're not yotze with it, with the ha'etz, because the suffix bracha and suffix bracha is a ha'kil, so therefore you don't make a shahakol at all, so you can't eat chocolate after you have a fruit. I was sitting there, I'm like, that makes no sense to me. And I went through like a couple marinikomos, but it's Rav Eliashiv. Talking about the posik ador, as we make a psak halacha, it's very hard to listen to what a posik says. When a posik says something against what you're natural inclination would tell you, usually your Yetzirah, but what your natural inclination would tell you, it's very, very hard to do it.
So what's the psak? You don't need it at all?
No, he says make the bracha on the shahak, on the candy first, on the chocolate first, and then make the eitz on the fruit, even though it should be the opposite way. So here's the idea. B'nei Yisrael had it even harder when it came to Moshe Rabbeinu. B'nei Yisrael looked at Moshe Rabbeinu, and they knew how great Moshe Rabbeinu was, but they also thought they were very great. Korach was not the only person who thought that he knew how to paskin, because Moshe Rabbeinu still was an unknown. And people looked at Moshe Rabbeinu and they didn't, but it was hard for them. It was very, very hard for them to get to that level where they could believe in Moshe Rabbeinu as well as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very, very hard. That idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind everything, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there every time, even though I have reason to think that the person doing it is doing it all by himself, and therefore does not deserve anything from me, doesn't deserve my accolades, but really HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind him, can be strengthened through my stability. Think of what happened over here. B'nai Yisrael did not know a thing about Balak or Bilam. Not one thing. And in fact, in the Gemara Bava Basra on Daf Yud Dalet, it mentions Parshas Bilam as a separate sefer from the Sefer Torah. It's a separate sefer, because it really doesn't belong here. Everything else has Moshe Rabbeinu or B'nai Yisrael, there's someone else involved. Here, Parshas Balak, there's not one mention of Klal Yisrael until the very, very end with Pinchas. Mamish, nothing. The whole Parsha of what happens in Balak and Bilam is a Nebuah. It's a Nebuah. There's no way Moshe Rabbeinu could have known about it. How in the world would he have seen it? Really, even though we don't even see it and we couldn't daven for it, there was nothing we could do to get ourselves out of it. Do we have any idea what a Kadosh Baruch Hu does for us during the day to keep us away from problems? Where I get up in the morning and I decide to take Howard instead of Tui, and then I find out later on that there was a 20-minute delay on Tui because they decide to do the worst possible day for construction. Does anybody even realize how many times you make those decisions and you have absolutely no idea why you did it? You sit there after and you're like, what was wrong with me? Why did I do that? Then all of a sudden, maybe, you hear later on, there's something that happened and you're like, oh wow, that's really crazy. I can't believe I just did it. Once in a while, we're privy to that information. 99% of the time, we're not. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is behind everything. The idea behind... Sorry?
How about when, like, you're supposed to take one road and take the other one thinking it's going to be faster, and it's, like, and it's all stopped.
As in the punishment, and the other way around. Yeah. 100%. This is crazy. Bilam would have cursed Bnei Yisrael, and he had all the abilities in the world to do it. And he could have caused terrible tzaras. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned it all into a bracha without us knowing about it at all. Without us knowing about it at all. Zechor na. Please remember, says the Chasam Sofer. What's the wording? Ma yatz Balak melach Moav. What was it that Balak tried to do? If you remember that, the end of the pasuk says, Leman da, so that you know Tzidkus Hashem. Then you'll realize how great HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. But if you don't think about Balak, if you don't realize what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did over here with Balak and Bilam, you'll never realize how many great things HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us every single day. Every single day. And that Ein Lahar, there's nothing to think about. And that's the Siyam for all Nevuas, for all the Nevi'im. Says the Chasam Sofer, that's the idea. For all of us to think to ourselves, we have no idea how great HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and we'll never know. We can guess, and that's it, and there's nothing else that we can do. Balak sent Malachim to Bilam. It says, Vayishlach Malachim, at the very beginning of the Parsha. Vayishlach Malachim to Bilam. So the idea is, and it's sent over from the Zohar, Malachim Mamish were sent over. Balak took Mamish Malachim and sent it over to Bilam, and brought these actual angels over. Says the part is Yosef. We have to understand, why would he do something like that? Maybe the pshat is that we can learn from here that even if a malach tells you to do something, if it's bad, you don't do it unless you ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Bilam heard the malachim. The malachim came to him. It was a malach. A malach came up to Bilam and said, Balak wants you to curse Bnei Yisrael. And Bilam said, I can't until I ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
How did Balak have the power to do that?
Balak was a tremendous mechashev, possibly even greater than Bilam.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that he got everything from Shemachazan and Azol. And there's a riot from the Akedah. What happened by the Akedah? Who told Avram Avinu to go ahead and sacrifice Yitzchak Avinu?
No.
Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. Who told him to stop? A Malach. Why did he listen? Because to do something good, you listen to a Malach. To do something bad, you never listen to a Malach. You have to ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu directly. That's why a Malach couldn't start it off, but a Malach could end it. That's the idea behind what a Malach can do.
How do you know what's good and bad?
You got to be an Avraham Avinu or a Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't usually talk to Malachim, but if I did, then I probably would be able to tell. If you have a visit from a Malach, you'll know the difference between good and bad.
I mean,
that won't be a problem.
A visit from God, I guess, you know, good and bad. But
yeah, you would know. You would know.
I didn't know you're not crazy.
You'd have to guess. Reb Tzvi Eli Melech Medinov, the author of Bnei Yisrael Schor Na Igre Dekawa, says a very similar vort, but it's such an awesome vort. He says the following. He says, there's shluchim sent by Balak. We're all extremely tummy. They had kategurim. They had accusations against Klal Yisrael. And they had shadim with them that were very, very powerful. And they were sent over to Bilam. Those were the shafim shabiyadim, the magic that was in their hands to destroy all of Bnei Yisrael and everything that they stood for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his infinite wisdom and all of his rachamim sent malachim mamish keneged those kitrugim, those accusations. Wherever the accusatory malachim went, those malachim up in Shemayim went along every step of the way. And every word that the malachim said to Bilam that was supposed to be an accusation against Klal Yisrael, that Am Yatzami Mitzrayim, they're still Tamei like they were in Mitzrayim, all the bad things that they had said, the malachim said tremendous things about Klal Yisrael. Because again, the whole lesson that we're trying to learn according to the Chasam Sofer is that everything that we do down here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us in Shemayim. And even though we see terrible things happening down here, there's a malach that's watching over in Shemayim. For every Hitler Yamach Shemo, there's a Malach who's watching over that guy and making sure he doesn't go too far. Exactly what needs to be done, he'll do. But nothing more than that, because he's got no power on his own. It's not him. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu working through Hitler Yamach Shemo. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu working through Ahmadinejad. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu working through anybody who tries to get Bnei Yisrael down. That's the power of what he was trying to do, and that's what it means when it says the word Ba'isahi. At that time, Balak knew it was a perfect time to be able to send these kitshugim against Klal Yisrael, to send these accusations. It was the perfect time. And that's why he became king at that time, because he knew how to start these kitshugim and how to do all these types of things. Balak had the powers of the Satan. And in more than that, Samkel, Samech Mem Aleph Lamed, is a gematria of 131. Balak's Malach and Shemayim made 132. That's the gematria of Balak. Balak's power, with the total amount of power of the Tumah of the Sam, of that Malach, of the Satan himself, plus his own Klipa. That's what he was trying to give over to Bilam. To show Bilam, through all the Malachim, all the Shluchim that he was sending from the Satan himself, how much power he can possibly have. People had such a Muna in Bilam's curses. They thought if Bilam cursed you, you were gone. There was nothing you could do. How have I, if we could have that Amunah, that amount of Amunah in the Brachos of Tzadikim? I'm going to give you a story. It's an unbelievable story. Rav Yitzchak Shwadron, when he was very young, this is the son of Rav Sholem Shwadron, the famous Maggid. All the Maggid books from a Pesach Kron are based on Rav Sholem Shwadron, the old Maggid, the Maggid of Yerushalayim. Just to tell you what a Maggid is. Sholem Shwadron, I never knew. He died before I came to Eretz Yisrael. I never knew the Maggid of Yerushalayim at all. He was obviously a great tzaddik, and Rav Pesach Kron has unbelievable stories about him. The next Maggid who took over for him was a Rav by the name of Rav Yitzchak Dweck. Rav Yitzchak Dweck. I knew nothing about him. I didn't know anything. He spoke in Zichron Moshe. But I didn't even know he spoke in Zichron Moshe. I didn't know what he did. I didn't know he was the Maggid. He was the official Baal Musar in Yerushalayim. I used to daven at a minyan, at a Vasikin minyan. He used to be at the Kotel. I believe, Avi, you daven there as well. I davened there every Friday morning, and they used to do like one of these. It was a very quick minyan. I loved davening at it because it was really quick, and I was you stay up all night Thursday night. You want to go to a quick minyan. You want to be really, really quick. But it's a Dweck used to daven at that minyan on Shabbos. He used to daven with my Rebbeim, Rabbi Hartman and Rabbi Weiss, and they davened at this minyan. The same Rebbe was there, but I had no idea who he was. No idea who he was. I used to speak to him and this and that and the other. But like, and he told me I shouldn't go to this minyan, and I never listened. I was like, it's okay. I didn't know who he was. I had absolutely no idea. I only found out later on he was the Maggid of Yerushalayim. Never said anything to me. Never said anything to me of like who he was or what he was or anything like that. And I saw his picture in the newspaper. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. He passed away just over 4 or 5 weeks ago. I had absolutely no idea. So let's get back. Rav Yitzchak Shwadron was the son of Rav Sholem Shwadron. He got whooping cough. This was back in the 50s in Eretz Yisrael. Whooping cough in the 50s in Eretz Yisrael was life or death. There was no way out of it. People were dying in droves from whooping cough. It was an extremely dangerous sickness. So Rav Sholem Shwadron didn't know what to do. The doctors had no etzos. So he brought him to the Chazon Ish in Bnei Brak. Brought him over to the Chazon Ish. And he said to the Chazon Ish, my son is whooping cough. What can I do? So the Chazon Ish thought about it for a second. And he said, listen, there's a river that flows outside of Bnei Brak. It's called the River Yarkon. Bring him over to the River Yarkon. And in the middle of the river, there's like a little small island. And in that island, there's some eucalyptus trees. Rent a boat. Row around the island. Let him breathe in the air from the eucalyptus trees. It'll be good for him, and hopefully it'll help his whooping cough. So Sholem Shwadron, eucalyptus trees. Where in the world? So he said, okay, fine. He rented a boat. It wasn't such an easy prospect in the 1950s in Bnei Brak. Rented a boat, got it, put his son on it, and started paddling out. Sholem Shwadron started paddling out with his son out to the middle of the lake. Went around, stayed there for 2 hours. After 2 hours, the cough, gone. Absolutely gone. Nothing left. So his son turned to him and said, Abba, if this is how you cure whooping cough, we should send everybody here. Everybody should come here. Sholem Shwadron looked at him and said, you don't understand. It's obviously not, and it has nothing to do with this river or with these eucalyptus trees. Because look, everybody has all these hotels by the Dead Sea. Because the Dead Sea, the properties, you know, the medical, the medicinal, you know, the healings that you can have from the Dead Sea are very well known. So all these hotels popped up. The Chame Tiberia, the hot springs of Tiberia. Tons of hotels around there. Why? Because everybody knows the Chame Tiberia, very good for this and that and the other. Everybody knows about that. Nobody ever heard about the River Yarkon. He said, this had nothing to do with the River Yarkon. This had to do with the Chazon Ish. I listened to the words of a Chacham, and I believed that what he said was going to help. And because of that, that's why you were healed. I've said this to people before. If you believe that the words of a Chacham work, if you believe that they have power, that it is real koach, it will have koach. If you deny it, I feel bad for you. Honestly, I feel bad for you. Because it's not going to work. Because you're going to sit there. That's basically what he did. But it's not going to work. And I feel bad for you. Because there are people out there that say, all these rabbis, what do they know? What are they going to do? And how are they going to help me? And they're going to tell me to do something and it's garbage and it's not going to do anything. I feel bad for them. I honestly, I cannot tell you how bad I feel. Because they'll never be healed. they'll never realize what it's like to go to a Rav, ask him something, do it, and be healed. I will tell you one quick story, but it's an unbelievable story. My daughter, Devorah, had tremendous amounts of eczema. Tremendous amounts of eczema. So when I went to Eretz Yisrael 4 years ago, she had it all over her face, on her body, and my son, Ruvi, also had a tremendous amount when he was born. In fact, it was so bad that people used to see us on the street. People used to think that Ruvi was in a fire. That's how bad it was. He just had red splotches all over his face, and it was terrible. There was nothing we could do. Went to every doctor you could think of. When we went back to America, we figured there was something in America that we'd done. Nothing helped. Absolutely nothing helped. So we went back to Eretz Yisrael about a year and a half after we came back to America, my wife and I. And my wife didn't want to get up. I wanted to go to Vasik, and I wanted to see Rav Aryeh Lichtenstein, Aram Lichtenstein, and I wanted to also see Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So I went to both. When I went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I couldn't see Rav Chaim. They weren't letting me in. So instead, I got to talk to the Rebbetzin. And I sat down and I talked to the Rebbetzin for 10 minutes. 10 minutes. She told me I should take this lemon and do this with sugar and add these things together and give it to my daughter, and that'll be fine. And I'm like, could the Rebbetzin please daven for her? Because I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. Could you please daven for her? And I promise you, this is no joke. When we got back to America, Devorah and Ruby never had issues with eczema again. They have like little tiny things. You'll see it sometimes when they have milk hicks. They'll have little tiny things. I have not had a problem with eczema over the past 3.5 years, 4 years. I don't remember when the last time we went there. If you really took, that's just a Rebbetzin. That's not even a Rav. Not even a Rav. I shouldn't even say that. But it's just, it's the Amunas Chachamim that's there. And if you don't believe in it, feel bad for yourself. Because it's there. It's there for you. They have an ability to daven. They have an ability to learn. They have an ability to do things for you that you just don't understand. That's what Rosh Hashanah Shadron is saying. And while he was going through the river, he said, every single time while we rode through, he was saying the words, Mitzvah Lishmo Dibre Chachamim. And he was saying, Vayaminu Ba'ashev Moshe Avdo. That's the idea. So very quickly, 1831. There was a plague that broke out in Eastern Europe, and Posen was hit. Rabbi Kiva Eger was the Rav of Posen at the time, and he was the one who wanted to start it off, and he wouldn't start it, whatever it was. Rabbi Kiva Eger was well-versed in Kabbalah, but he never told anybody what he had. So people started asking him, can you make us kamios? Kamios are amulets that wear around your neck, so that if somebody becomes sick, they'll get better. He asked Rabbi Kiva Eger for some amulets. Can you give us some amulets? So Rabbi Kiva Eger said, yeah, because it's such a bad time, and because this plague is all over the place, I'll give you amulets. So he used to write things down on a piece of paper, close up the amulets, and he used to tell people, do not open it up. Do not open up the amulets no matter what. So one person was healed. He got better. And he was so curious. He couldn't hold himself back. He had to open up the amulet. Took a couple people with him, so at least they could share the punishment together. They were all unbelievably curious. They want to see, what did Rebbe Kiva Eger write down? What shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu did he write down? And they open up the amulet. You know what it said?
Couldn't have opened the amulet.
It was a Tosfos. Tosfos. Mesechta Sukkah, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, Dibur HaMaaskel, Bipsolas Goren V'Yakev. If you want to go look it up, go look it up. I have no idea how that healed anybody. Just stomp Tosfos. Just put in a Tosfos. Whatever Tosfos he was learning at the time, he would write down that Tosfos that he had, he'd close it up, and he'd put that in the amulet, and that would heal. Stamatosvos. It's unbelievable. Oh, it's a shame of our Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a shame of a Malach. It's nothing. It's a Tosvos. Do you realize what you're learning? Next time you learn Sukkah, do Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Look at that Tosvos and think of it again. Look at that Tosvos. I looked at it last night. I'm looking at it like, what in the world? What does that have to do with anything? Mom is nothing. Let's end off with one high note. There's a pasuk that says that Bilam was not able to do. Bilam said to Balak, I'm not able to do lasos kitana o gedola. I can't do anything small, I can't do anything big without a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Can't do anything small or big. Of course, I didn't look up the pasuk, but it says the word lishmoa kitana o gedola. So you do anything small or big. So the question is, if you can't do anything small, then kal vachomer, you can't do anything big. If you can't curse the Jews a little bit, you're not going to be able to curse the Jews a lot. So what's the pshat in saying, look, I can't do Kitana or Gedola? Listen to this to Tish Shimshin. Rav Shimshin asks Tripoli, says the following. He says, we all know Yud Ke Vav Ke, Yud E Vav and He, stands for Midas Arachamin. Midas Arachamin. Yud He stands for Midas Adin. That's why the pasuk says, Ashre Agether, Asher Tiyasurenu Ka. Praiseworthy is the person who is given Yisurin by Yud He. Yud Hei Vav Hei, on the other hand, is rachamim. That's chesed. Elokim is what? Midas Adin, right? But El, Aleph Lamed, is Midas Arachman. Chesed El Kol Hayom. The chesed of God all day long. Here's the pshat. When Bilam wanted to curse Bnei Yisrael, he wanted to use Midas Adin. So he tried using the Shemos, Yud-He, and Elokim. Because Yud-He is Midas Adin, and Elokim is Midas Adin. So he kept trying to use some type of Midas Adin to be able to knock down Bnei Yisrael. But every time he tried to use it, every time he opened up his mouth to say Yud-He, it came out as Yud-Heh Vav-Heh. A Malach put something Gedola in his mouth to make it bigger than what it was. Whenever he tried saying the word Elokim, what happened to him? He stopped at El. And then he couldn't go any further. And he couldn't say anything more. And it became smaller in his mouth. So he said, I can't do anything, said Bilam. I can't do Kitana. I can't make the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Ketana, of Aleph Lamed for Midas for Yud Hey, that's Midas Adin, and I can't do Gedola. I can't do Elokim, which is the Midas Adin, that's the bigger name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't do Ketana or Gedola, so what do you want me to do? That's the Pshapai and Ma Ekov. What can I curse? Lo Kava Kel. Aleph Lamed won't let me curse, because that's Midas Arachamim. Uma Ezom, how can I get angry? Lo Zoam. Yud Kei Vav Kei Adonai. That I can't curse and I can't get angry because Yud Kei Vav Kei is coming along instead of Yud Hei. That Elokim is becoming Aleph Lamed. So there's no way I'm going to be able to curse Klal Yisrael. That's a very, very cute vort. Let's say the Shabbos table, a little Kel versus Elokim and Yud Hei versus Yud Kei Vav Kei. So that's all there. So let's go summary. Balak wasn't ready to be a king. Therefore, he wanted to prove himself by bringing about Bilam to make himself into a king. And it did work. How do you become a king? It's a process. You have to listen to people and build yourself up, not just sit on a throne and assume that that's going to be good enough. There's a mitzvah to remember what Balak did to us. The Chasam Sofer says the greatest mitzvah is to understand where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind us. That He's there with us at all times. Such an unbelievable Chasam Sofer. I want to read it again. Number four, the malachim that were sent were real malachim. And they had a purpose. Their purpose was to be mekatreg. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was behind them and made sure they only said good things. Believing in Bilam's curses can also let us believe that we can believe in a tzaddik's bracha. And if you believe in a tzaddik's bracha, only good things can happen to you. Nothing bad can happen to you. All based on the tzaddik's sitkus. And number six, Bilam couldn't use Hashem's names of Midas Adin. He could only use the names of Midas Arachamim. Thus, he wasn't able to use Elokim and Yud-Heh. He was only able to use Havaya and Ale. Those are the only shemos that he's able to use, and that's the idea behind Lassos Ketano Gedola. Shkoyach, guys. Have a good Shabbos.